Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 10 of Scholarly Peers podcast. My name is Sin Wang Chong. I will be your host for this episode. And in today's episode, I'm very, very happy to have my dear colleague, Dr. Sal Consoli, here with us. Hi, Sal.
Hi, Sin Wang. Thank you so much for having me today.
Nice. It's very nice to see you, although the listeners can't see you now, but it's very nice to see you and to talk to you about peer review in general, and in particular, your experience in journal peer review. Do you mind tell us a little bit about yourself? Of course, your professional background, academic background, but specifically maybe your experience in peer review as an author, as peer reviewer, or maybe as a journal editor.
Sure. So it's a delight to be with you and everyone else today. So I am a scholar that works within the area of language education and mainstream education more broadly. I have been publishing in what you could call applied linguistics and education journals for the past few years, and I've also done lots of reviewing for many of these journals. I think I'd say that having worked in both the UK and other international contexts, I've noticed that, you know, journals are often associated with certain institutions or certain centres in certain countries. So you can notice differences in the way they approach the submission and reviewing processes. So I think it's been interesting and fascinating to see that, to see how different journals that belongs to different families around the world act more or less similarly or differently to each other.
Right. And I think, Sal, from my understanding, you recently guest edited a special issue for System, I believe, on narrative.
Yes, I guest edited two special issues, one for Educational Action Research and one for System. So that's an example of like applied linguistics and mainstream education journal divide. Yes.
I think that's a very interesting experience that I think our listeners will be interested to know a little bit about later on, because I think we have heard from editors sharing, associate editors sharing, reviewers or editorial assistants, but we haven't heard from a guest editor. So people will be very interested to know how different it is to edit a special issue. Right. You're an editor, but you're an editor of the issue, but you kind of have to liaise with the journal's editor and also with the authors and the peer reviewer. So it would be quite interesting if you can share with us later on about this experience.
Absolutely. Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with your experience or your identity as an author, because of course you have published a lot in different journals and different areas in very good journals. Can you share with us some unforgettable peer review experiences as an author? And I leave it to you to interpret the word unforgettable. It
sure.
Could be, you know, positive or mixed. Okay.
Yes. It's probably a shame that when I first heard the word unforgettable, I thought of something negative. That's the sad thing about this topic, maybe. So the one experience that comes to mind as an author that I think will always be part of my journey as an academic, particularly when I speak to other authors or potential authors or PhD students or other people that want to engage in publishing, is that one really needs to understand that the reviewing process is a very complex activity where people come from very diverse, complex, perhaps life journeys, and therefore the reviewers themselves, whether they appear to be good, nice, or harsh and bad, they all come from different places in life, and therefore, you know, we have to remember that these are people, just like the authors are people. We're all people working together in this dark space. We don't know who's talking to whom, obviously. And therefore, it's not unusual to come across reviews that sound a little nasty or harsh or and reasonable, that sort of thing. And I've actually had a running joke with some of my colleagues over the past few years, because I confess that I've never had a journal rejection. Until recently, I had what you could call a mixed feelings review, where one review was quite nice and accepting of the paper, and one was, as I said at the time, really angry with me and the paper. I felt that the reviewer was very angry, in the sense that they pointed out many useful things about the paper, but it was the style of writing, it was the fact that they seemed to target the author rather than the paper, that felt really harsh. And in a way, it was good that this reviewer took their time to really write a lengthy review with bullet points about several sections about the paper. So it was indeed useful and constructive. But the writing style that really targeted, you know, the author's expertise and the author's validity within that, the context of that submission, it really felt like it was a harsh, angry kind of message from that reviewer. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, this was during the heart of the COVID pandemic, when everyone was really experiencing all sorts of problems. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, you see, this reviewer has no idea who they're writing to. Mm-hmm. And people could be going through all sorts of things in life, and some really dark things, particularly during the COVID pandemic. And I really felt that that could have really done some damage to somebody in a vulnerable position, or somebody that perhaps, unlike me, would have maybe given up. You know, I remember I took 2 months off that paper, because it was really difficult to engage with that reviewer's comments, because they were really emotionally charged and very harshly worded. So, you know, I'm very grateful that in the end, after 2 months of time off that paper, I was able to address every point of that reviewer's commentary. And then it was quite, I don't know why, obviously, because, you know, as an author, you don't quite know everything that happens behind the scenes. But it turned out that in the second round, there was this, the first round of revision. In the second round of revisions, the editor sent the manuscript to reviewer, the one reviewer who was nicer, but also a new reviewer. So I think that the so-called nasty reviewer didn't actually get a chance to comment again. I do not know whether that's because the editor engaged with my response and they realized that some of the comments made were perhaps unreasonable, or whether maybe that reviewer just didn't want to review for a second time. I don't know. But it was accepted the following time. So that was obviously a positive experience. So I'd like to say to people, even if you get what you could call a harsh, nasty review, maybe take some time off if you really feel unable to engage with those comments, if they really speak to you in a way that's not necessarily healthy and favorable. But do engage, do your best, because, you know, this is also a constructive experience, and it indeed can work out in the end.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting experience. I think it boils down to resilience of the author, basically. And I wonder, I mean, Sal, you're obviously experienced, and you have published, you have worked with different peoples. I'm sure you can kind of adjust after 2 months of time off, as you said. But for really, really novice researchers, maybe they're still completing their doctorate degrees, I wonder how they can muster up this kind of resilience, or, you know, and whether, I wonder, in your, in that particular experience of yours, did you work with a co-author, or, you know, what made you want to go back to the reviews instead of let's give up and let's submit elsewhere, or I would not submit this paper?
Good, very good point, actually. So first of all, let's say to anyone, both students, early career researchers, even seasoned researchers, actually, anyone, I think, should be able to reach out to a critical friend or somebody perhaps more experienced who can really be a sounding board, or someone who can just have a chat with them, look at the reviews, and get a fresher perspective. Because let's not forget that when we see something that concerns ourselves and our work, we might as well misinterpret what we're reading. Somebody with a fresher external perspective could give us a lot of insights that we may not have. So I would say that students should probably aim to refer to the supervisors for support and guidance when it comes to reviewing or interpreting reviews. In my case, I actually, after I decided to go back to the paper and engage with the reviewer's comments, I decided to show my responses to a senior colleague in my department, because I was a little worried, actually, that I may somewhat unwittingly, somewhat consciously, relay some of those emotions in my responses. And I wanted to make sure that my responses were very professional and and clear. And the best piece of advice that actually my colleague gave me when she looked at the responses that I gave to the reviewer was that all you want to do is give the editor and the reviewer the good, healthy impression that you're happy to work with them and that you're easy to work with. So obviously there were a few things that you may have to express a disagreement about, and that's fine. You know, people shouldn't just agree with the reviewers. But everything has to be done very politely, even when the reviewer might have said something that could be deemed as inappropriate. So I think having somebody to offer that guidance, because you might not really see that when it's your own writing and you may be emotionally involved, obviously, with that experience, it's always healthy to get someone external, possibly experienced, to give you some insights and external guidance on what your responses is, for example. And I confess that I felt really comfortable sending back my review, my response, because I took my time to reply very politely, very kindly, in detail, and also appreciating the fact that these reviewers, they take quite some time of their own private or professional life to really engage with the paper. So I think reminding ourselves of that kindness and sense of collegiality is important, even if sometimes some comments aren't worded as nicely as we wish.
Very good advice. Thanks, Sal. Let's move on to your other identities as peer reviewers and as editors, editor of special issues. I wonder if you can share with us some unforgettable experiences. I mean, you can talk about both, or you may want to choose an identity that you feel more relevant to talk about.
So you probably would be able to tell me this yourself, because you are the expert in when it comes to peer reviewing processes. I don't know if I should describe myself as a very busy reviewer, in the sense that you know, sometimes I talk to colleagues and say I receive so many reviews, but I don't know if there's an average number that, you know, would appear to be the number that sort of suggests that you are engaging with the normal numbers of reviews or an extraordinary number of reviews. But I can safely say that I probably receive between 2 and 4 requests a month from several journals. And I usually tend to say yes, which then means that I end up having to send a review probably once a month, you know, and that is a lot of work, as you know. But I confess that I enjoy that, because usually I say yes to journal requests that really target something that is within my own expertise. I think that's important. We have to be careful what we agree to do, because if it's something that happens to be in the field but quite far from our own area of expertise, then we might really struggle to engage with the paper and offer anything meaningful. So I do take the time to, you know, read the requests carefully, check the abstract, and be sure that that's something that I can really comment on, but also I would say something that you also have an interest in, you know, something that could really somewhat be meaningful to you as well, you know, something that will enrich your own perspective and things. That, I think that's always a big motive for me. And that's why it's exciting to really engage with reviews from journals of different kinds. Mm. There was a time when I'd say yes to every journal because it was obviously exciting to receive a request to review from, especially, you know, top Q1 journals. Mm. But then there comes a time when you have to really start saying no because you have to value all other activities in, you know, your workload. Did you ask again about the unforgettable experience as a peer review?
Yeah.
You did. Okay. So there was this very, very prestigious journal in the field of language education that asked me to review. And I accepted because it was a paper that focused on one of my core areas of expertise. And I was really interested in the methodological approach of this paper. So it was all good to go. And I offered my review, which was probably, if I remember correctly, was major revisions to begin with. Mm. And I must say, you know, that after all reviewers offer their comments, you get an email with every reviewer's comments. And I must confess, similar to the experience that I once had as an author of the sort of angry review, I was really sad to see that there were three reviewers in this particular case. I was one of the three. I was really sad to see that I think at least one of them was really, really harsh, again, in the way things were written. And I was surprised particularly because I thought the paper was actually quite good quality in the first place. But it seemed to me that the other two reviewers they clearly didn't think the paper was as good as I thought. But one of them in particular really, I thought, was one of these people that maybe unconsciously just write in the sort of this emotional style that, again, I think they should really think twice before they might say something that could damage people's perspectives on their work and who they are as academics. So I really felt annoyed, actually, when I saw that this one reviewer was a little harsh in the way they wrote things. And I was even more perplexed when, after the new resubmission by the authors and we all gave our new reviews, I remember acknowledging the efforts made by the authors to improve the paper, which was already, I thought, in good quality. I think one other reviewer kind of agreed with me that there was much improvement made, but that other, what I call anger reviewer, continued to look for details that would delay the actual reviewing process quite substantially. I think that paper got published in the end after almost 12 months. Mm. And I thought some colleagues might say this is a normal process. And that probably is the case. But I still think that as a reviewer who sees some of the stuff that goes on in the background, I think we need to remind ourselves when we act as reviewers that we are dealing with people. We are dealing with people who work hard. We're dealing with people who may not have had the same training opportunities that we've had as doctoral students or even early career researchers. And we're dealing with people who might really need to progress in their particular area for all sorts of professional and personal reasons. So I think, of course, we shouldn't encourage poorly produced work, but I do think that if something, you know, if two reviewers out of three think that something is quite good or has potential, it's very surprising for me to see that one other person is so negative about it. Mm-hmm. So even if we do find things that we disagree with, I think one really, as a reviewer, should make the effort to be as polite as possible and remember that you're talking to another human being. And I often say to my students or even colleagues, you should say whatever you would feel comfortable saying to that person face to face if you were to meet them. Mm. Now, that doesn't change the fact that you really could disagree passionately with some of the things that you read, and that happens to me as well. In a recent review that I offered to another Q1 journal, I was very disappointed that the author, whom I'd asked to include some references to a series of works in the literature that were missing. And all they did was just simply adding the names and the years of publications throughout the text, but without much engagement with the actual literature. So I was actually very upset when I first saw that, because I was thinking, what did you do? But you see, even if I was a little upset, sort of thinking, come on, we're not that stupid, you know, just do the work. I didn't say that, you know. I appreciated that they understood the message that I'd given as a reviewer, but I made it clear through illustration by referring to the text to say, okay, so you've inserted this reference here, but you don't actually say what this work is about and how it relates to your text. Can you please unpack? And can you try and do the same for these other references that you've used? Yeah. So it's so important, I think, to filter things through a human lens that reminds ourselves that we are working hard, we're doing our best. And who knows, maybe those people did a superficial job because they had, you know, there could be people working in very difficult contexts in the world where there's a war going on, or where they may not have access to a computer all the time. We don't know these things. So I think it's really important to remind ourselves that we're dealing with people, and all sorts of things could be going on in their lives. So even if we find something that we disagree with, even if we disagree passionately, let's express that politely.
Yeah, I think that the messages are very clear, Sal. I think that, giving feedback to authors is not just about the content of the feedback, but it's really equally important. It's the way you express the content. You know, I think that's very true. And also the second message I got from your sharing is, you know, we have to be able to differentiate between something that we think is entirely wrong or inaccurate, or it's simply something that we may have another way to interpret or understand.
Absolutely.
So I think that's very important as reviewers. If we I do not think reviewers intend to delay the process, but if we are obsessed with something that's just not the way I would do things, and I would like you to do it my way, I don't think that's fair to the authors. But if we see something like, for example, if people claiming something as a narrative inquiry and say to you, Sal, this is narrative inquiry, but this is not, you know, that you have to point out because it is not narrative inquiry, right? Yeah. So I think that's very, very true. I'm very interested to know more about your guest editing experience, but before that, I have to ask you this question, Sal. So how would you describe yourself as a peer reviewer? That may be a little bit blunt, but I mean...
How would I describe myself? Okay, I would describe myself as... interested, interested, caring, and collegial.
Good. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Perhaps, I mean, I say caring and collegial, but I should admit that there have been times perhaps when my reviews were shorter than that could have been because I was under pressure for, you know, time. So I do think that it's important that one engages with a paper fully, and therefore that your review, especially if you're asking for major revisions or any kinds of revisions, I think it's important that you offer something detailed and nuanced and specific to the authors, because it's unfair to say major revisions and then sometimes you find some statements that don't really lead you anywhere, or that don't give you a way forward. So although I definitely aim for being constructive and specific and nuanced when I give my reviews, I confess that there might have been times when I was short of time and I might have given shorter reviews. So I do like to think of myself as engaging, engaged, interested, and caring and collegial, but perhaps with the caveat that, you know, nobody's perfect.
Right. I'm sure you'll get even more invitations after the episode's aired.
Oh, dear. I didn't think about that. That's probably dangerous.
You know, those qualities are what editors are looking for. So now I would like to really delve into your experience as editor of two special issues, and even maybe at the expense of other questions, because I think that's very unique. Can you walk us through the whole process? So for example, starting with, for example, how do you get to become
very good question.
Issue, right?
Yes. So needless to say that the two guest edited issues that I did kind of were two very distinctive experiences, you know, that I couldn't quite necessarily say, oh, they're very similar, you know, to each other, quite different, because different journals, different people, and therefore different experiences. So in both cases, becoming a guest editor involves having an expertise in a particular area that the journal is interested in, at least in broad terms. Usually it has to be something that is novel in itself, something that hasn't been covered particularly by that journal before. And if it has been covered by other journals, you know, it's important to be aware of how different the special issue is going to be, because there's a reason why it's called special topic issue. You know, how is that topic different from the way it's been covered before? So in my first experience, actually, I was invited by a senior colleague to co-edit this special issue, and in the end, actually, I ended up taking the lead. I don't know if it's because I was engaged, collegial and passionate at the time. Well, I don't know, but it ended up being that I kind of took the lead. And, you know, I had to write a nice proposal where you kind of explain the... I should say that the colleague invited me because he had been approached by one of the editors of the journal at a conference. Okay, that's one of the ways you can actually utilize conferences very meaningfully, I suppose, by engaging with people like journal editors. So my colleague came to me because he'd already been approached by the journal, and then we wrote a proposal where we explained the background of the topic that we chose, the rationale for the special topic issue, and how this would contribute to that particular journal. And then obviously have a list of potential contributors with titles and abstracts of the contributions, people that ideally you've already spoken to and are happy to write something for the particular special issue, but with obviously the caveat that you would open the special issue with a call for papers, as well as the people that you obviously know, because it's important that the journal editors know that you are connected to a community of people who would represent the topic that you're interested in, especially people from different academic backgrounds, but also representing different geographies in the world and experiences. So once that is done, obviously you have to submit a formal proposal to a journal that is assessed by a number of people in the editorial board, and normally if it's a positive outcome, they would come back, get back to you with maybe some suggestions and then give you the go ahead. This was somewhat similar to the other guest editing experience, where again I was the one this time actually taking the initiative. I approached a colleague who is a leading scholar in a particular topic that I decided to address, and we approached the editors of the journal that we were interested in informally via email, and then they asked us to prepare a formal proposal, which we did in a similar style to the one I just described, and then we submitted that, and then every editor, this was quite a big editorial board actually, every editor gave their feedback, and they, once they reached their decision, they communicated with us quite promptly actually, and we started off the process by inviting people or obviously calling for papers. And often it's very nice to see that people we invite might not be able to contribute, but they are able to offer suggestions, and that's how the, it's exciting because you get to really engage and interact with people within the field, your areas, but sometimes people that you haven't interacted with before, and that's the exciting part of this job as well. Needless to say that you learn so much from different people whose work you read and review and support. In that respect, I should say that as a guest editor, at least, I'm sure many normal editors, so to speak, do the same. It was a job of nurturing and supporting people, sometimes emotionally, because they get back to you with setbacks and delays and problems and sort of things that you really want to try and resolve, because, well, first of all, you want to support these people, but also because it will, you know, impact on the special issue because there's a timeline that we had to go with. Usually journals have very strict production dates, so it's important that when the proposal is accepted, you offer a timeline which you will be able to follow through. So being a guest editor, at least for me, has been also an experience of being some form of support system for people who experience it's probably also not surprising that this was the case, because a lot of these special issues work was done during the COVID pandemic, or at the very beginning at least of the COVID pandemic. So understandably, people came to us with all sorts of problems, questions. And sometimes as an editor as well, you look at the reviews that you get from peer reviewers and you really have to make the effort of reconciling what's been said, because it can be very contradictory, or you really have to check that everything that's been said, as we said earlier today, I personally like to check that everything that has been said is fair. I know that being fair is very subjective, but, you know, at least checking that the editor is comfortable with what they're sending to the authors is important. You want to be sure that they will know how to move forward. Sometimes if we just automatically submit reviews without checking them, authors may really be stuck because they may not know how to address certain points, especially if there are contradictory perspectives on the same issues. So I think as an editor, it's important to be supportive, but also to be analytical in the reviewing of the actual reviews before these goes to the authors. And perhaps I think this happens quite frequently these days, holding the reviews back before making a decision of whether you might want a third opinion before, you know, sharing them with the authors. I think that would be useful. But then again, journals have different systems. So one journal, for example, would require that after the guest editor was happy with a manuscript and the final reviews offered, they still had to go through the senior editorial sort of check. Whereas with another journal, we were able to, as guest editors, we were able to be more autonomous, and we had stronger agency in deciding what to accept and what not to accept. The senior editor would still have a look through everything that we submitted, but I think they were more relaxed and more trusting of our work in that in that case.
Yeah. Okay, that's very interesting experience. Obviously, it's a lot of work. It's not just about about editing the issue. It's about liaising and a lot of things. I wonder, I mean, this is a very good opportunity, as you said, to network with people and to, you know, kind of start your career in academia, having your name identified or attached to a topic, or the topic attached to your name. I think it's a very interesting experience. I wonder whether it's something that early career researchers are capable of. I should not use the word capable of, but is it normal for journals to accept special issue proposals from early career researchers?
That's a very good point, actually. Sadly, the answer is no. Something I forgot to say, when I submitted the proposals for these two special issues, as well as obviously the proposal, we had to submit the full CV and list of publications of each potential guest editor. And I can safely say from the comments that I saw from the editorial boards of our proposals, they very much care about the editors' experiences, not necessarily with editing, but with publishing themselves. So journals would probably be interested in the potential editor's expertise in the proposed area, and that has to be demonstrated by way of publications in other journals or other outputs. And then obviously the peer review and editing experience helps making a case for that. So really the upshot of that is that early career researchers are certainly at a disadvantage in this sense. I think I was lucky in that I, by the time I proposed these special issues, I'd already done quite a bit of work on my own that warranted that proposal, those proposals, and that gave me credibility to do, to carry out the work. But I should also suggest that working together with a leading scholar obviously helps, because there is so much that obviously one can learn from these people. But a word of advice, please do not engage with leading scholars just because of their names. It's important to engage with people because of who they are, not just through their name, but actually who they are in terms of work ethics, but also academically in terms of perspectives on the topic, because, you know, you might have different leading scholars within the same area, but, you know, with different perspectives that could clash or not with yours. So I think it's important to resonate with people that are closer to what we do. And in my case, actually, I'd, for example, in the case of narrative inquiry, which is one of my core areas of interest, I'd already worked with a couple of what you could call leading scholars, and I chose to invite one of these people because I felt more comfortable talking to and working with this person at a human and professional level. So it's not just about the name, it's about really a good match of the academic perspective. Again, it's not about one being better than the other, but it's about coming together as colleagues and that sense of collegiality that respects expertise, boundaries, and that sort of thing.
So I guess for early career researchers, if they want to get experience editing a special issue, it's best for them to work with somebody who may be more experienced, who may be more senior in the field. I wonder, you mentioned your two experiences. You were quite proactive in the sense that, you know, you asked the editor about it, or you, and then they ask you to submit a proposal.
Whereas
I know there are journals who would have, who would issue an open call for special issues for the coming years. So I wonder, is it okay? I'm asking from the perspective of an early career researcher. Let's say I'm very interested in a topic. I found a senior colleague who are willing to work with me on this special issue. Should I wait for a call, or should I then approach the editor of the journal that I'm interested in and ask if
I think, as you say, really depends on the journal. Some journals assume that people will actually take the initiative, because they journals do have a yearly schedule of special issues, and therefore they know that, I mean, these journals that don't actually publicly advertise, because they kind of assume people will take the initiative and then say to them, okay, we have a spot at this point in time. But as you said, there are other journals that like to publicly announce calls for special issues proposals. I don't quite know if there's any rule or any reason for that, because I know of equally internationally renowned journals that work in either way. So I don't know if there's a reason for that. But I'd say that if early career researchers are interested in doing this kind of work, again, it's important to emphasize that they have to be experts in a particular area. And by experts, I don't mean just completing a PhD in a particular area. They also have to have had other academic experiences that relate to that particular topic that they're interested to explore. Because again, it's a matter of offering that credibility to the journal editorial boards. Working with leading scholars is certainly, it's fascinating, it's useful, it's meaningful, and it's strategic. Obviously, if you apply for a to be a guest editor at an early career stage. But again, it's important to know exactly who you're working with, what you're getting yourself into, because it is a lot of work. And it's important to know, therefore, how the other people work and how you work together. So, for example, in my case, the co-guest editors were people that I'd already published with previously. So I knew exactly how we'd work together. And in my case, I think it was important as well that even if I was working with the leading scholar, it was someone actually who really treated me as an equal, and who gave me plenty of agency to, you know, do my thing. Mm. I think that's important because obviously, for all sorts of good reasons, senior editors, senior academics may want to take precaution in, you know, obviously gatekeeping or quality checking and these sort of things. But I think if a scholar, no matter how early career or seasoned they may be, if they can demonstrate that they have concrete, tangible experience in a particular area, that's all that matters, really.
Go ahead.
I was just saying it's something that I would recommend only if people are genuinely passionate about the topic that they want to propose for a special issue, but also if they are passionate about networking and connecting with people who may that they don't know, actually, you know, especially your contributors, you may not always know them well or know them at all. And that's important because you really have to act as someone who's going to support them. You know, it's not just a name on a system. You really have to be able to offer meaningful support. So you have to be interested in taking time to engage with people's writing, the reviews, mediate, liaise, you know, between different people, and then offer support that is actually constructive. And sometimes it's about supporting someone emotionally, sometimes it's about supporting somebody academically or stylistically. So there's all sorts of kind of supports that you need to be ready to offer. And I guess for that to happen, you do need the experience yourself, but you also need your own network of support in case you need help. And that could often be your co-editor or the senior editors of the journal. So that, again, it's important to know that the journal that you want to work with is a journal that you resonate with, that the people who run that journal are people that you will be happy to interact with and that will be able to support you as an editor and support your work, as in the topic of the special issue.
I think that's very good advice. And I think even we didn't really talk about support for early career researchers and peer review. I think in the context of editing a special issue, I think, Sal, you mentioned a lot about getting support. And also, I think the perspective you offered is really, really interesting to me. It's very often we talk about what kinds of support that ECRs can obtain. So it's like getting things from other people. What can I gain in this networking opportunity from this person? It's not that kind of mentality. Okay, I'm working with this leading scholar. I'm to get fame or, you know, something. It's sometimes the junior researchers, they have that kind of mindset. It's not wrong because they want to be successful in their career. But I think you reminded us of the importance of looking at whether as a human being or as a researcher, whether your perspective aligns, whether, you know, it's equally important, if not more, than just saying because he or she is famous, so I approach him or her. You know, I think that's very important for us. So thank you so much, Sal. I think that's a very, very interesting experience. And I'm so glad that I invited you to be my guest for the 10th episode, because the first 10 episodes, I interviewed early career researchers. And starting from the 11th episode to the 20th, what I plan to do is to invite journal editors so that we can now have another group of people who are experienced leading researchers to talk about the whole process. So I'm so glad that you're here to conclude the whole part one on early career researchers and your experience as a guest editor of special issues. It really adds another dimension to the 10 episodes. Thank you so much, Sal.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. It's been a delight to talk to you, and actually thinking out loud it also gives you more insights. So let's always remind ourselves to talk to our critical friends about the things that we do, because it really does help you grow and gain more insights about yourself as well. So that's been really nice for me as well. Thank you.
Thank you again, Sal.